This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back. About 75% of Matt Larkin here. I apologize if my voice sounds terrible, but I do have a cold from my little toddler, so I apologize. But I'm here in spirit and physically with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy, the usual cronies. How's it going, fellas?
Pretty good.
Just great. You miss days because of this kid. You get sick because of this kid. What the heck?
It's really it's a great excuse for everything. Yeah. It's the new my dog.
Lucky she's so adorable.
Yes,
it's a good thing she's so adorable.
That is true.
Yeah.
How's it going, guys? We don't see each other anymore. Just an update for everyone. We still don't have an office, so this is pretty exciting. We haven't seen each other for a while.
I'm just tickled.
Although it's a pretty good buffer for Ken. I feel like one Ken every 2 weeks is pretty perfect.
Nice. We've been to games together. We've been at Leaf games together since then.
I missed one. I was sick.
Yeah, well.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about this week. Just tons going on. It's a lot of fun. I guess let's start with the biggest news of the week. The Sedins, Daniel and Henrik, penned a heartfelt letter to their fan base. They revealed in advance they wanted their fans to know that they're going to be retiring from the NHL, playing their final games. So it's big news. I guess the first question a lot of people ask, and it's normal, when anyone who's close to Hall of Fame caliber retires, people want to know, are they going to make it? So I guess let's start with that. Are they slam dunks? I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to get in, but do they deserve to get in?
I don't think they're slam dunks. I actually wrote about this today on THN.com if anybody's interested. But I think they're going to get in. I defer to Brian Costello on a lot of this stuff, one of our senior editors who's a Hall of Fame guru. He says they're very good bets, but they're not sure things. They're not shoe-ins. And I would tend to agree with that. I think, you know, what's kind of funny is that if you just go by numbers and accomplishments and that sort of thing, you could almost make the case that maybe Daniel should get in Henrik should get in and Daniel shouldn't. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be like everything else they've done in their career. They're going to do it and they're going to do it together. And I think the reason why is because, number one, I don't think you can really quantify how good Henrik would have been without Daniel, right? Like if it had just been Henrik by himself. I mean, these two played on such a similar plane. They knew where each other was. They had this innate sort of on-ice soulmate thing going. So I'm not sure that Henrik would have been as successful without Daniel. And secondly, I think the thing that just puts them over the top is the fact that they're just two of the most decent human beings you're ever going to come across. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, the Hall of Fame is about on-ice accomplishments. I get that, and it is, and it should be. But I think there's also an element to the Hall of Fame of bringing honor and integrity to the game, and these two guys did that in spades. Like I think of guys that, you know, historically have been some of the most kind of respected guys in the game. You know, you think of Jean Beliveau's, you think of, you know, Silaps, you think of Joe Sakic. As far as I'm concerned, in that respect, these two guys are right there with every one of those guys, and I mean this, in the history of the game, who have been that kind of player. So I think that's probably what puts them over the top.
Fair. Yeah, and I totally agree with that, and I think they should get in. I also think that, you know, Daniel was robbed of a Hart Trophy the year after Henrik. I feel like there was probably a media bias where it's like, oh, we can't give it to another Sedin. And, you know, Corey Perry finished that year on a remarkable run, so he ended up winning it. But if I'm going to be kind of like pragmatic about this, you know, it's a Hall of Fame chosen by a very small group of insiders.
Yeah.
And we're never going to see twins play at that level again. And as you said, amazing people. They were amazing on the ice. Best players in Vancouver history, I think it's safe to say at this point. They lead them in every offensive category, the other.
Yeah, best player. Yeah, best players.
As good as Marcus Naslund was, you know.
As good as Pavel Bure was. As good as Stan Schmeal was.
Yeah, exactly.
As good as Dennis Vermeer.
Petri Skriko. One of my favorite names when I was a kid. But anyways, so, you know, you have they're basically Matt Sundin with trophies, and Matt Sundin is in the Hall of Fame. And I would also point out that it feels like if you did something good for a Canadian franchise, your chances of getting into the Hall of Fame skyrocket. Like, I think every Calgary Flames owner ever is in the
Hall of Fame. Well, every guy who played for the Leafs in the 60s is in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same goes for Montreal. You know, we're going to see it, you know, with a couple of other franchises as time goes on. But I think everything lines up where, like, who's more famous than the Sedins from, you know, their era? Very few. You're talking about, like, Crosby, Ovechkin, maybe Chara. Like, it's a small group, you know? And I think that, you know, they showed that level of excellence, and they just have all sorts of intangibles going for them as well.
It's funny because with, you know, if you crunch the numbers, I mean, there are guys who aren't in who have superior numbers to the Sedins in every way. You know, guys like Pierre Turgeon, Jeremy Roenick, even Vincent Danfous, you know, Rod Brind'Amour. These guys all have superior. Theo Fleury, who I can't understand why he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, probably one of the greatest small men to ever play the game. You know, has a Stanley Cup, put up great numbers. You know, so they're you could make, you on numbers alone, you could make the case that the Sedins do not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame because there are other guys. But then you say, okay, well, there are other guys who have those kinds of numbers who are in. I've always thought you don't make it right by continuing to perpetuate the mistakes. So you don't compare him to a guy who doesn't deserve to be in and say he deserves to be in. Mm. I would rather compare him to guys who aren't in and say, well, those guys aren't in, so right. why aren't these guys in? But like I said, I think the fact that they approached their career the way they did, the fact that they were kind of a package deal, which you always have to remember, and the fact that they were way tougher, way more resilient, you know, than anybody ever gave them credit for, particularly early in their careers. Like the Stastnys. I mean, the Stastnys were tough. Peter Stastny was one of the toughest players that ever came along, and he never got credit for that, and right. I think that's a part of it, too.
And the thing is, some of those names you mentioned, Ken, none of those guys won a scoring title. None of those guys won MVP.
Nope.
And the Sedins played in a much lower scoring era. So if we factor in era adjustments, their numbers are more impressive. And at least for me, I always say if I was in charge of the Hall of Fame, my personal main criterion is, were you one of the best, you know, 5-6 players in the game for a period of at least 3 to 5 years?
Yep.
And then bookend that with more years of good production. And I do think around the 2009, 2010, 2011, the Canucks or the Sedins were that, right? They each won a scoring title.
Yeah.
A Pearson for Daniel, a Hart for Henry.
Yeah, they were both first team all-stars.
Both first team all-stars. Yeah. Trip to the Stanley Cup final, at least one President's Trophy, if not two, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I can't remember off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But I do think their peak was good enough. And like you said, Ryan, I mean, if a guy like Sundin's in and they're that close numbers-wise, but they actually do have the individual accolades on top of it, I think they do deserve to get in. And I think a lot of people forget, too, it's not the NHL Hall of Fame, it's the Hockey Hall of Fame, which means Olympics are included, and
they
each have
world
gold medal.
And they have world championship.
That's right.
Yep.
So Olympic gold in 2006, which actually helps their case, even if there's no Stanley Cup, just like it's going to help Henrik Lundqvist when the time comes for him. Mm. He might not have a Stanley Cup, doesn't look like he's going to, but he's going to have
that.
And
not if he stays where he is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What do you guys think about their actual decision? I mean, do you think they should have tried one more year to mentor the kids in Vancouver or to sign somewhere else and take one shot at the cup? Or do you think they're justified in their decision?
Well, when a guy, or in this case guys, say, look, I want to be a better dad and a better husband, pretty tough to argue with that.
Pretty tough to say
you should stick around for the team because you maybe haven't done enough for them. I'm on board with this. Like, and I think there's something to be said for guys who retire when they look at their situation and they know they can't be the players that they once were. They can still be pretty good players. Like, Jean Béliveau had like 70-something points the year he retired. He could have gone to the Quebec Nordiques in the WHA for big money. He could have come back and played for the Canadiens. It was like, no, I'm this is it. I won my cup. He won a cup in the last year. Not my cup. He won about 100 of them before that. But he won the cup in 71 and said, no, that's it. I'm leaving. And I think there's something to be said. There's something kind of, again, that honor, integrity, all that stuff. I think there's really something to be said for making that decision when you have a clear mind and you know that you probably could come back, but you can't come back and be the player you probably were. I think there's really something kind of honorable in doing that.
Yeah, and I like that they did have a bit of a transition from them to the next generation of the Canucks. So Bo Horvat, he got the Sedin experience. Brock Besser, he got the Sedin experience. Mm-hmm. Thatcher Demko, at least for a game, he got the Sedin experience. And we know that there's going to be more great youngsters coming up the pipeline. Elias Pettersson, Adam Gaudette, Olio Levy. So, you know, all those kids are coming. But at least some of those guys have seen what it means to be the star in Vancouver and what it takes to be a guy at that elite level and to be elite off the ice as well. So I think it was nice for the Sedins that, you know, they got to see these kids grow a little bit, and it's great for the Canucks that the Sedins kind of gave their blessing in the letter and said, we like the culture that Coach Travis Green is putting together here. We have faith in the young guys. It's a great passing of the torch. I mean, if you really wanted them to, maybe they do the Lemieux with Sidney Crosby thing where they play like the beginning of the season and then they're like, yeah, you're fine for next year. But I think they clearly obviously did more than expected and more than they needed to given their legacy in Vancouver. And I think just the time they had this past year with those young guys will pay big dividends.
Right. It's funny. I would have liked to see Henrik in particular mentoring Elias Pettersson because there's just such a synergy there between the two, Swede. And I think Pettersson's upside projects pretty similarly to Henrik. Maybe a bit better for Pettersson, the goal-scoring ability. But at the same time, it's not like Henrik's not going to take his phone calls. I'm sure he'd be like, hey, want to come over in the summer, the off-season in Sweden? I'll help you train. I'm sure that line's always going to be open if he's looking for mentorship. So there you go. From a Canucks team standpoint now, obviously there's $14 million coming off the books. Do you think it's time for Jim Benning to invest that? I mean, I've heard people say throughout wild theories, James Van Riemsdyk, stuff like that. But do you think it is time to take a shot, or should Vancouver enjoy just having more breathing room for a little while as they continue with their rebuild?
I feel like the most prudent thing right now would be, you know, you're rebuilding and you've got a lot of great assets, but you're at the point where you can almost do the Arizona-Vegas thing where you could take on a bad contract in exchange for some high-end draft picks and just sort of buttress your future because you've made great selections. You know, Vancouver has a great scouting department and, you know, they've hit on some really nice picks in the past 2-3 years. So I almost feel like you bank that for the future and you say, next year, we're going to let the kids play. We might be last in the division, but that's cool because we really believe in this group that we're building right now. And next year's going to be about experience.
What I wouldn't want to see the Canucks do is like another Louis Erickson thing. You know, like sort of one of these mid-level guys where you go, what the hell are you doing?
6 years.
So, like,
James Neal.
You know, I mean, if they can get John Tavares next year, then, yeah, I guess, you know, obviously Obviously you do that. You know, they're going to have, like, the cap's probably going to go up to close to $80 million next year. So they're going to have, like, $26, $27 million under the cap, which I don't think you necessarily just say, yeah, we're going to burn through that and we're going to sign all these guys and we're going to do all this stuff. No, I think as Ryan very aptly pointed out, it's a really good opportunity to take on some dead contracts. You know, say Henrik Zetterberg decides he's done this year in Detroit. Okay, so you take on the Henrik Zetterberg deal and then you get something from the Detroit Red Wings in the way of futures. I think that would be the way to go. I think Ryan's right again. They're starting to kind of build towards something here, and I don't think you can rush this sort of thing. If they were a team that, you know, had some sense of we're pretty close, I don't think they're at that spot yet.
Yeah, that's fair. To use a romance analogy, it's like they just got out of a long-term relationship and it's like, okay, just go to the bar and have a one-night stand or two, sign another Thomas Vanek to a one-year deal, flipping for picks again. Don't jump in with Louis Erickson and fall in love right away and get married and elope. But, you know, it's like just take your time, take a breath. And I think a good template is what
you've been dumped a few times, eh, Matt?
Yeah, you know. I've learned a lot. Yeah, that's fair. Yes, this is true. I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah, okay. So the Leafs, I think, are the template a couple years ago when they just kept adding like the Daniel Winnicks of the world, the 1-year deals, so transparent. They obviously were going to flip them for picks, and it seemed to work. So I'd like to see Vancouver do it again. Maybe not with Thomas Vanek specifically, because I'm sure he's a guy who's tired of that. Mm. But just find some guys that are relatively cheap, can still be mentors to the youngsters, just like Vanek was. He was very helpful with Brock Besser this year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, hopefully get enough value you can flip them again at the deadline for picks. I have to go back to a topic. I mean, I feel like we're talking about it every week, but it's just not resolved. And I don't know about you guys, but it's driving me crazy. The Hart Trophy vote. I cannot remember ever a vote this hard. It's hurting my brain.
I'm seriously thinking about it at night.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm literally losing sleep.
Me too.
It's literally keeping me up at night.
It's tough. And I think, you know, maybe it's magnified by the fact that, you know, we voted, more than 80% of us voted to make our ballots transparent now. So everyone knows they have to be held accountable. You really want to make the right choice, more so than ever. And I mean, McDavid continues to pull away, but his team continues to pull away from relevance in the standings. Mm-hmm. Taylor Hall's having another monster surge. Andre Kopitar has been fantastic. He's hit a career high in points. Claude Giroux's hit a career high in points. Nathan MacKinnon is still carrying the Avs. It just goes on and on. Sasha Barkov's going to have the most ice time by any forward in the last, I think, decade. Wow. So who the hell do you pick right now? And I feel like I'm going to have to ask it again next week. Mm-hmm. For me right now, I feel like Taylor Hall is suddenly rising to the top. He's got 38 points more than his next closest teammate. And that's a separating factor for me from Nathan MacKinnon, who has Mikko Rantanen on his wing all year, every single game. And Rantanen is a fantastic player, has more than 80 points. Mm-hmm. Whereas Taylor Hall's got 88 points. Second place on the team is 50 points. So it's so clear how important Hall's been to the team. He's absolutely carried the Devils, in my opinion. I think he's got 12 goals more than the next closest Devil as well. So I think right now he's back to the top for me. What about you guys?
I would agree with that, Matt. It's just impossible to ignore what he's doing. You know, it's just impossible to ignore what he's doing. And I know I said a little while ago that Connor McDavid was the guy, but wow. You know, since the All-Star break, he's got 26 goals and 49 points in 31 games. Connor McDavid does. So that means before the All-Star break, he had 54 points in 49 games, which is really, really good, which is amazing. Sure. But it's not on the level of what he's playing. And the Oilers have been out of it since the All-Star break.
Yes. Yeah.
So you could argue that he's essentially put up 50 points in games that have meant nothing.
Garbage time. As they say in fantasy football.
Yeah. So I think that has to come into it. You know, Taylor Hall, on the other hand, since the All-Star break, 21 goals, 42 points in 31 games. You know, I mean, and as you say, the gap is so huge. Season ends today. I got to make my vote right now. It's going to go to Taylor Hall. Mm-hmm. You know, and just for the entertainment value alone. Like, I mean, could you imagine that Edmonton Oilers fans losing their shit over Taylor Hall winning the MVP over Connor McDavid?
Oh, my God.
The guy they let go, the guy that should still be there? That might be worth it just in and of itself.
That's going to influence me just for comedy purposes.
Yeah, I like Taylor Hall for it for all those reasons. The big X factor is, should Colorado make the playoffs? You know, they're life and death for a wild card spot right now.
Yeah.
Dramatically overachieving, like the Devils, because I think most people thought the Devils were going to be one of the basement dwellers in their division, just like we thought Colorado was going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. And here's the X factor for me. So Semyon Varlamov's out. Eric Johnson is out. If Nathan MacKinnon can get Colorado into a playoff spot with two of the most important teammates gone, what does that say about his accomplishments? Mm-hmm. And again, that just makes it that more difficult, because it really looks like New Jersey's going to make it right now. They got a pretty nice cushion
there.
Yeah,
they're going to.
So for me, I would have Hall and MacKinnon 1-2 in voting, and I would really have to do a deep dive and say, okay, what was the more impressive feat
right
now? And you'd have to get into, you know, points per game, because MacKinnon, well, I mean, they both miss some time. So you'd really have to get down to the nitty-gritty, but I mean, there's some fantastic cases. We haven't even mentioned Andre Kopitar, who's having a fantastic year for the Kings as well.
Yeah.
So it really is a great year, but I feel like the standings are going to kind of dictate it for me.
There's no wrong choice here.
Right.
In my opinion, there's no wrong choice, including Connor McDavid. That's not the wrong choice.
And he's going to be the best
player in the world.
He's the best player in the world. And Oilers fans, if we don't pick him and you get upset, just know, I'm sure he's going to be on our ballots. You still get to pick five players. He just might not be our first name.
No, if he doesn't win it, it's not a slap in the face to anybody.
No.
Yeah.
It's not. It's just the fact that his team didn't make the playoffs, and there were other players whose teams did, and they were super, super integral in them doing that. And like I said, you know, Claude Giroux wouldn't be an egregious choice. Taylor Hall wouldn't be an egregious choice. Nathan MacKinnon wouldn't be an egregious choice. Connor McDavid wouldn't be an egregious choice.
Right.
Any one of those four would be worthy Hall of or Hart Trophy winners.
And I really like the point you made, Ken, about McDavid's production really spiking after his team was out of it. And it reminds me of something McDavid told me when I interviewed him last June. And I don't want people to take it the wrong way as a knock on McDavid, but I just want to paint a picture of how competitive he is even with himself. So I asked him about getting to 100 points, and I said, did it matter to you at the end of last season? So like his team was already pretty safely in the playoffs, but he said, yes, I was nervous. I was nervous. I wanted to get to 100 points so badly that I was nervous about it. That's how much he cared about that milestone.
Yeah.
And good for him. I really appreciate him admitting it. I hate when players pretend they don't care about that stuff.
Right.
But it's a good reminder that even when his team is no longer in it, he still cares about the numbers for himself.
Sure.
And that's not to say he cares about himself. It's to say his motivation has been to get to that number because his team is already out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he's been better since he was playing more for himself than for the team, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that might, I mean, if we're looking, we're splitting hairs no matter what. We're looking for anything to break the tie.
Right.
That could be one factor.
Right.
The fact that he did it more when it was about numbers and less about the team success. So maybe it's coincidence, maybe not. It's not a knock on McDavid. He's still a great team guy, but just it did play out that way.
Yeah. I think this is one of those ones where it's like circumstances dictate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
we're searching for any tiebreakers we can find because it's so close.
Yeah.
And that's why, to Ryan's point, I think the final week's going to matter. Every single game is still going to matter.
For sure.
It's a determining vote. Brad Marchand gets the maximum allowable fine under the CBA of $5,000 for a cross-check to the face of Andrew McDonald. It wasn't a hard cross-check, but it couldn't have been more deliberate, if you guys saw it.
Yeah.
That's now six suspensions for Brad Marchand and five fines. Do you think it's time for him to get the Rafi Torres treatment? Because I know, I mean, the argument could be that the force of the blow he delivered to McDonald was not too dangerous, but it still doesn't take away from the fact that it was so deliberate. And that's 11 times he's been disciplined supplementarily in his...
Supplementarily?
There's the first time I've used that word. In his career. And I'm just wondering, I mean, one of the mantras of the player safety department is supposed to be, if a player's not showing signs of learning or changing their behavior, you have to punish it. And that usually rings more true to someone repeating the exact same behavior, which is why Torres got 41 games. It was always headshots. But I think Marchand, I'm starting to wonder if that doesn't matter, that it's not the exact same play. It's just dirty, 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 dirty.
Mm.
Sounds like a new hot rap song, which I'm not going to act out. So I don't know. Personally, I think it's time to just throw the book at him and say, listen, you're not learning. You're not respecting us. We got to give you a 30-game suspension, something like that.
Matt, you just talked about one of the mantras of the player safety department. Can we somehow get that codified and get all their mantras in order here? Because another one of their mantras, obviously, is if a guy's really valuable to his team, we're not going to suspend him during the playoffs. You know, they bailed. They bailed big time on this.
Claude Giroux got suspended during elimination game, and his team lost in 2012.
Okay.
Just saying.
Okay. They bailed. They bailed on this, in my opinion. Totally.
Yeah.
This was a terrible, terrible precedent that they set.
Yeah.
I mean, do we start giving him the Rafi Torres treatment? Yeah, that came a long time ago.
And three times this year alone.
That came a long time ago. This guy, I heard somebody on the radio talking about what an idiot Brad Marchand is yesterday. Some talking head on the radio talking about what an idiot Brad Marchand is. I could not disagree more. He's a genius. He's an evil genius.
Yeah,
but
right.
He's a genius.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing.
That $5,000 that Brad Marchand paid in that for that cross check is a incredible investment in his career.
Yeah.
If that gives him the kind of space that he needs to do what he needs to do, $5,000. He'd pay that every day if that's what he had to do. No, I think that Brad Marchand is a dangerous player. and he's a danger to everyone who's on the ice mm-hmm. at the same time he is. And I just think that he does this because he can do this.
He's daring.
And he
people.
Knows. And he knows he's only gonna get. He knows he's only gonna get a slap on the wrist if he cross checks Andrew McDonald in the face in a game with 3 games to go in the season. I don't blame any of this on Brad Marchand. I blame all of it on the NHL. I think Brad Marchand goes right to the edge as much as he possibly can, and maybe a little bit over, and whatever he goes over, because I think he's paid like $1 million.
I think it's
fines.
Almost $900,000.
Yeah, $900,000 in fines. You put that against his career earnings, that $900,000 in fines is probably the best investment he could have ever made in his career.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, he doesn't need to be that player. Like, you look at his scoring ability, you look at his two-way play, it's like, you almost want to be like, Brad, baby, you don't need to work blue. You know, it's like an old Hollywood
thing.
You
sound like the guy from Die Hard, the bearded guy.
Yeah, yeah. Bubby, please. I think he's, you know, he's one of the elite forwards in the NHL. And I think you're right, Ken, where, like, he keeps coming up with creative ways to hurt people, where he's, like, jumping into the air, pretending that he didn't see somebody, and you're right, it's like, you know, you can't fine him for the same thing when it's always something slightly different that just happens to, like, hurt somebody on the opposing team.
Yeah.
But, like, how effective would he still be if he just played like Patrice Bergeron does every game? Would it be that much different?
I don't know, but I don't think he has to play this way. I don't think, you know, I mean, I think that he could still be an effective player without playing this way, and he does it because he's allowed to. Like, to me, he's the little kid in grade school who's the hellraiser. Who every time he does something, he gets sent to the principal's office. He stands there, he shuffles his feet, and he looks down. And the principal says, you can't keep doing this stuff. You can't keep doing this stuff. And he goes, yeah, I know. I can't. I'm not going to do it again. I can't keep doing this stuff. No, I won't do it again. And then he turns around and he laughs when he leaves the principal's office, because he knows next recess he's going to throw a snowball and hit somebody square in the face with it.
Yeah, I think you guys have nailed it. And, you know, I'm a more consistent defender of player safety than most, having, you know, tried to learn as much about it as I could over the years. But in this case, I can't. I think my message to them is, guys, Brad Marchand is making you look dumb. He's embarrassing you. He's making you look dumb, and he knows it. And it's time to fight back. Because I agree, the analogy is perfect. He's laughing. He's laughing at you right now, NHL.
He is.
It's time to slap or stop slapping his wrist and do something a lot more drastic. Because it's only a matter of time. He's going to hurt someone again. He absolutely is going to hurt someone again. He's Matt Cook. He's Matt Cook with scorn.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
The New York Islanders have been out of it for a while now in the standings. And early in the season, I felt like whenever we talk about Tavares, we leaned more toward the idea of him staying. But things went so far south since
then. They
really did. I mean, we know that the Belmont Park Arena project is still a go, which helps because, I mean, Tavares has been pretty open about being excited about that, right? But still, I mean, the season couldn't be more of a disaster. Has your opinion changed, and do you think Tavares is now on his way out?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Montreal Canadiens, here's what I think. First thing I think is, yes, I think he's on his way out. I definitely think he's going to market now, you know? I think he's going to see what's out there now, because why would you extend it this far and not do that? He's going to, at the very least, go to the 5-day window and see what other teams are interested in him, of which there will be many. If I'm the Montreal Canadiens, I say, just fill in whatever the maximum amount is that we can pay you for 7 years, and here you are if you want to be here. I think the San Jose Sharks might be another team with Joe Thornton leaving. The only problem is Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski are both unrestricted free agents after next year, and they've got a lot of money tied up in their defense with Burns and Vlasic and that, right. So I'm not sure they can make it work. I think St. Louis is another good landing spot for him. Like I said, Montreal. But I do think, see, to me, if I'm David Boyle, I go for it. I go for it with this guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They do not have a number one center. I'm sorry. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but Ryan Johansson is not a number one center in the NHL.
He's a good number
in my
two.
Opinion.
He's a number two.
You know, Kyle Turris is not a number one center in the NHL. If you want it, it's particularly if you don't win the cup this year, if they come up kind of short, and you just make it work. You just make it work like good GMs always do, right? Because you can offer John Tavares, look, we're going to be a good team for a long time. You know, I also think that there is a chance that he ends up back in Long Island. Mm-hmm. And I think what they can say to him is, look, we can give you one more year than everybody else can at maximum term. So we have that going for us. We got two first round picks this year, two second round picks this year. We've got some decent youth. We've got the new arena coming. We can make this work. And I think that John Tavares will seriously consider that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
No doubt. I think he does consider staying with the Islanders. My problem is there's too many factors working against them right now, which is if you look at the Islanders, you know, do they have a legit number one defenseman right now? Not really. They have some good defensemen. No. You know, their forward depth is pretty good. They've got weapons. They got Barzal. They got Lee. They got Brock Nelson. They got Josh Bailey. So they have some pretty good weapons. But, you know, Tavares obviously, you know, stirs the drink, although Matt Barzal is going to win the Calder. But I like your San Jose. I was thinking San Jose as well, Ken. Simply because, you know, this is a guy that doesn't necessarily need the searing spotlight. I actually think Montreal would be a horrible idea.
Yeah.
Because they already have the Carey Price extension kicking in. They already paid Shea Weber ungodly amounts of money. So unless you can unload the Shea Weber contract, I don't know if they can even afford to have Tavares long term.
Oh, I think you make it work. And I think anybody in this league can make this work somehow because that's what they do. But to me, I mean, who needs a number one centerman who can make plays and make players around him better more than the Montreal Canadiens do?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a terrible fit for John Tavares, but they may say to him, look, we've got the goalie, okay? We've got the goalie that can win us a Stanley Cup.
Mm.
You know, we'll have you.
Right.
Okay, we'll build around that. We'll make that work somehow.
We also have hot dogs that people like.
And Yuppie.
We got Yuppie. I think San Jose, I mean, you know, they already have a bunch of great weapons. And, you know, I get with Couture and Pavelski, but I think you can probably keep one or both if you got Tavares there.
Yeah.
They would be more than happy to get on a line with him or you know, split time down the middle with him. And you're not in a searing spotlight. You're in a good hockey market, but you're in a hockey market where you could probably walk around to the farmers markets and people won't start, like, stampeding. I think that's a good fit for him. And in terms of actual money, John Tavares has shown in the past that he can do with a good amount of money. He doesn't need all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is his chance to seriously cash in. I get that. But I feel with him, he wants to be on a good, stable team and hopefully make a long playoff run. And for me, you know, if he doesn't go back to the comfort of the Isles, San Jose would make the most sense.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about what you said, the Islanders just don't check off enough of those boxes.
No.
They check off the money box, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they can offer him full term, 8 years. That's basically the one box that they can check off that nobody else can.
I think another team can, but I can let you finish your point, then I'm going to pitch another team.
No, but I'm just saying they can give him the extra year.
Oh,
they can give him 8 years.
Yes, you're right.
They can give him 8 years at maximum. So if the cap is 80 next year, the maximum you can pay someone is 16, right? 20% of the cap, is that what it is?
I believe so.
15 times.
What?
Yeah,
15 times. 5 times 20%. 16?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, they can offer him 12 and a half times 8.
Right.
They can do that.
Right.
Nobody else can do that.
That's fair. That's right. The team I wanted to pitch should have at minimum $20 million in cap space, is on the rise, had more players than any other team at the World Juniors this year. Tavares would not even have to move. He would keep his anonymity. He'd have an elite left winger to play with, the New Jersey Devils. To me, that's the dream fit.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they're on the rise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we know they're only getting better. You could have Heischer and Tavares to build around as your 1-2 punch long term. And they have more guys on the way. To me personally, If I'm Tavares, that's where I want to go. You don't have to uproot your life if you're happy living in the New York area, right. New York, New Jersey area. Just fire across the Hudson River, baby. Mm. And I don't
intriguing.
Know. To
nice.
Me, that's where I'd go.
Yeah, nice.
It's
nice.
One to think about.
Yeah.
We'll get to some reader questions now. I'm sure everyone saw Erik Karlsson pick a puck out of the net.
Yes.
In what might be his final home game of the center. And he claimed he didn't think anyone saw. I mean, come on, Eric. Do you know what year it is?
That's like these Russian guys when they tell some Russian guy something and they go, oh, I didn't think anybody else would hear it.
Really? Yeah. Really? So we had a reader, Andy, who asked, where does Erik Karlsson land? And I think if the picking up the puck is a clue, it's not Ottawa.
Mm.
Feels like a fair answer. Is that where you guys land right
or
now?
Or it's the best contract negotiation ploy ever.
Yeah, that's not bad. Accidentally on purpose?
Yeah, it's a $60 million puck.
Interesting.
This is gonna be a tough one. I talked to someone who's actually pretty close to Karlsson this week, and he said that the trade at the deadline was a lot closer than people thought. It was actually really, really, really close. And if one side or the other, one of the sides being Ottawa, of course, or the other being probably Vegas, had just tweaked something a little bit, he would have been traded at the deadline. So, does he have 1 foot out the door? He's probably got 1 foot and most of the other leg out the door right now. But I think the reality is that Ottawa, Pierre Dorion has to make a legacy trade here. He has to make the Joe Sakic trade for Matt Duchene look like a ripoff. You know what I mean?
Right,
like he doesn't have to hit a home run. He has to hit, like he has to do like a Roger Maris here. He's got to knock it right out of the park. And I don't think he does that unless that deal comes along. Mm-hmm. You know, is it Vegas? I mean, they would be a team that I think would be able to offer the futures
mm-hmm.
that the Senators would need. But I'm not 100% convinced he's gone this year. I think there's a very, very good chance he gets traded, and if it happens, it'll happen at the draft. But this is not an easy deal to make, just by virtue of the fact that the Senators have to get maximum return here. Yeah.
So let me pitch something, because I was thinking about teams that Erik Karlsson would go to. Vegas was one of them. Edmonton, I thought, would be kind of fascinating as well. Mm. But how about the number one team that I was thinking of, because they have a lot of cap space, is Colorado.
Hmm.
And if you look at the Avs, obviously, you know, we were talking about Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen earlier. Along with Gabriel Landeskog, they have a fantastic top line. When Semyon Varlamov is healthy, they have a legit number one goaltender. And Jonathan Bernier has been pretty good, you know, when he's stepped in as well. So how about this as a trade proposal? Because I like your idea of it being a legacy trade. So you go Tyson Barrie, Cale Makar, well, the rights to Cale Makar, because he is playing, going back to UMass.
Yep.
And, you know, two or three first rounders, whatever it takes for Erik Karlsson. Do you do that deal if you're Pierre Dorion, if your back is against the wall?
What if you're Joe Sakic, though? Because to me, what makes
you still have Connor Timmins in the pipeline.
You do.
And Samuel Burke.
What I'm saying is the Avs are an up-and-coming team, and you're getting 1 year of Karlsson. To me, that why a Karlsson trade is way harder now is because right now he's a rental. I feel like
he's a one-year rental. He's a long-term rental, and you would have had him for two playoff runs if he had been traded at the deadline this year.
And if you trade him at the draft, he's not eligible to sign an extension until July 1st.
Right. So, I mean, maybe you got to wait on it, or it's a sign and trade of some sort. Like, the timing is obviously crucial on there. And maybe if it is a rental, then it's just like Barrie and Makar and, you know, a conditional first round.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I think you've got to put in, you know, I would insist on a big time core player. Like if I were Ottawa, I'd be wanting Mikko Rantanen. That's who I want.
Yeah.
You know, plus what you said, plus the deal, plus the package that you mentioned.
As fake Joe Sakic, I have to decline.
No, the only thing is that, you know, Sakic could trade away all the futures he got for.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
I think based on
then
Karlsson,
it becomes Matt Duchene for Erik Karlsson.
Oh, wow.
Whoa!
I'm blown. Wow. I think based on Karlsson's current contract, I think the one team that has the cowboy mentality to do it is Vegas, because they're like, right. And I hate to use the Vegas analogy, but the gambling analogy, but they are playing with, you know, house money. Right. Yeah. So I think they could be like, yeehaw, you want coat of glass? Okay, whatever you want. You know, yeah. give
they won't say it. They won't say it that way though.
They probably won't. No, probably. I think you're right, because Bill Foley's not from this, the deep south. But I think their best position. I wonder about Tampa, but I guess Ryan McDonough is still under contract, so they probably pulled themselves out. But I was thinking about it, if Tampa doesn't win the cup this year, could they make a reactionary, no, we need to win next year type of move? Yeah. We're almost out of time, so we're going to do these two questions pretty quickly, okay? The Twitter name here is insert clever playoff name here. Mm-hmm. And that creature asks, which team that missed the playoffs will make it next season? So make a pick quickly. Go for 25 words or less, and don't pick a team that's on the bubble, because that's too easy. So don't say the Blues if they miss. Mm. Okay, so make your quick pick.
The Dallas Stars, because they're too good to miss again. They're in the plus in goals for and against. You know, they've got a really good lineup. They just need a bit of depth. I mean, obviously, if their big guys don't score, they've proven to have a real Achilles heel there. But I would say Dallas.
I'm going to go Calgary Flames. They should have made the playoffs this year. If they get off to a bad start next year, they fire Glenn Gullitson and basically just ride the new coach into the playoffs.
And they'd probably fire him Monday.
I'm
thinking Black Monday.
Listen to this podcast quickly. I'll say Vancouver. I think 2 years ago it was Toronto. This year it was New Jersey. I think Vancouver's going to be the next team that's ahead of schedule in its rebuild. Elias Pettersson. Calder Trophy next year, if he comes over, which he better, for my prediction sake.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I think you will too. Last one from Peter Pietrangelo, maybe related to Frank and Alex. Who knows?
Maybe.
So this question is, my team is out of the playoffs.
Right.
So who should I root for? So make a pitch for a guy like Peter to root for a certain team, because it's a fun story. Right. And his other criterion is, must be a team that's expected to get past round one. So,
right, okay.
What's your pitch?
I would say the Toronto Maple Leafs, because those plucky little underdogs from that small market, they really need the support. No, I would say there's two teams that jump out at me. One of them jumps out a little bit more at me, and that's the Winnipeg Jets.
Right.
Because they do everything the right way, and they play the game the right way. You know? They're fast, they're big, they can score, they're exciting, they're not boring. And they have built their team the way teams are supposed to be built.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, it's part of what's helped them is the fact that they haven't been able to waste their money on bad signings, right? So they can't go out and sign a bunch of free agents. So they've had to build from within. They've cultivated their own players. They've signed them long term. They've done everything the way you're supposed to do it to win in the NHL. Mm. And I think that's something that should be rewarded.
Good. I'll go with the Vegas Golden Knights. Not only is it super fun because they're an expansion team and breaking all sorts of records, but they play the game the way you want teams to play, which is fast, offensive hockey. And we know it's a copycat league, so if you have more teams that are like, we need to be as fast as Vegas, then that will make next season even better to watch.
Good. I agree, Vegas as well. We may never see a team in a position like this again in year one, so let's cherish every second we get of it, especially in the playoffs. It should be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And a bonus pick, maybe Washington, because no one expects anything from them. They've had such a tough run as a franchise, always choking. Maybe this is the year that
no
expectations.
They won't win, though, you know.
They won't win.
Do you know why? Do you know
because
why
Washington.
Because they're losers.
And that's what makes them.
That's what they do.
That's what makes them adorable, right? Okay, so that's one reason to root for them. Thanks for listening, everybody. Next week, we will be previewing every series. Should be a lot of fun. Should be very yelly as well.